Good afternoon. This is the Professor Dr. Ron Daniels, President of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and Distinguished Lecturer Emeritus from York College, City University of New York, welcoming you to this February 17th edition of Vantage Point. Valentine's Day is coming up, and so is Malcolm X Day, actually, on WBAI 99.5 FM. That's on the Pacifica Network, WBAI on the Pacifica Network, in collaboration with ycradio.org. Well, today we will be honored to have shortly our State of Newark report. The first Monday of every month, we are honored to have the Honorable Roz J. Baraka join us to tell us what's going on in the city of Newark, but much more than that, as he is one of the most progressive leaders, elected officials, political leaders we have in the country. So we are standing by for him to join us shortly. But in addition to that, I have to join with our other co-hosts and folks, and just encouraging people to, as I said before, mask up at a minimum. I know that there are those who have issues with vaccinations and other things, and I'm not going to argue and debate that. I'm just asking people to mask up at a minimum. Protect others. Show some concern for folk. It's not about you. It is about, you know, not spreading and shedding, potentially, you know, just in case you might have it. Don't pass it on to others and therefore harm them. So I'm urging us to just take that little step to care about each other as human beings. Secondly, obviously, there is a concern about Black history being attacked now. So maybe we'll talk about that at some point. But I just got to say, and I asked the mayor about that as well, this attack on Black history, doing Black History Month. People are coming for Black history. But the other issue that is very prevalent, very prominent, is the question of the perception or reality of violence, crime, fratricide, murders of civilians and police in our communities. And the New York Center has become sort of the epicenter in terms of the focus on Mayor Eric Adams and the most recent visit of the President Biden, high profile visit to the city to talk about this. So we are going to be talking about it today. One of the topics I will take on the soapbox is reimagining public safety and law enforcement. And I actually be issuing a statement that hopefully you'll all listen to, just in terms of some ideas that I have, given the fact that we in the Institute of the Black World 21st Century have some experience on this issue. And of course, similarly, in my role as executive director for the Center for Constitutional Rights, also some ideas about this. And I think there are causes for concern, but it's a real issue. We ought not sweep it under the rug, but we don't want to create a solution that potentially long term is worse than the problem. But it is a problem, and we can't ignore it. We need to address it head on. So again, we'll be asking the mayor his opinion about some of these matters as well. One of the advantages of having Mayor Baraka on is that he is conversant with all of these subjects, including the pandemic and the question of when can we return to normalcy. There's a whole discussion now of moving from pandemic to, pandemic to endemic. Is that what it is? I forget the term now, but it's supposed to be some sense of normalcy. So it's treated pretty much like the flu, some acceptable, even though there's no acceptable number of deaths that you could really ever tolerate, but nonetheless, there is the discussion about that. So we want to launch right into it. Mayor Baraka has joined us, and so we want to begin our conversation. Mayor Roz J. Baraka, welcome again to Vantage Point.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, it's our privilege. Well, first of all, when I talked to your senior policy advisor, who is capable, able, and just such a magnificent job. She said, at the first of the month, Dr. Daniels, there's a big announcement that the mayor may be ready to make about the lead pipe replacement process, which we heard a lot about. Newark, of course, was in the grips of this crisis that is really in the United States and across the world, with these lead pipes and lead in the water and helping to, damaging our communities, our brain power, our families. So I'm asking you today, Mayor, can you declare mission accomplished?
We will be able to do that on Friday, in fact, that we, in fact, changed all the lead service lines in the city.
All right. Well, that's a big accomplishment. And so we'll be tuning in. And I know you don't want to peep at all, but I'm glad you were able to say it on Vantage Point here on our State of Newark report. The other thing, obviously, you want to talk about is I saw Governor Murphy talking about moving forward with opening schools and developing a plan. I know by reading the excellent press reports that come out from the press office, there's ongoing efforts on your part, obviously, to deal with COVID in a very systematic and sympathetic way in the city. So how are you seeing the progress on COVID? And do you expect that businesses can return to being businesses, restaurants being open? And I guess there's really a focus on schools. And as a former educator, I know that's uppermost on your mind as well.
Yeah, I mean, our businesses are open. I mean, right now you need to show proof of vaccination to enter up until Wednesday, in fact, next Wednesday. And, we'll reassess that afterwards. Our numbers are starting to go down, back down in the city of Newark. That's a good thing. So we are just counting on that and, continuing to push what we've been doing until this thing just goes away. Well, at least we learn to live with it.
Right. Well, speaking of learning to live with it, what are your thoughts? There's been some confusing messaging, ostensibly, people say, and whatever, but there are some basics, right, in terms of what we know and what we've learned that should actually allow us to move forward with some normalcy if we could get the cooperation of maybe a larger segment of the population. Your thoughts?
Say that again. I can barely hear you.
Yeah, and I was saying that the return to normalcy. Your thoughts about if that's possible or how that's possible, if perhaps we could get a more cooperation from a larger share of the population.
Yeah, I think, more of the people that begin to, do what's necessary. And I think more and more people are doing that and more people are ready for this to be behind us. So, it's just taking time and it's happening. Unfortunate thing is that this virus is not waiting for anybody. It keeps mutating. But the good news is that, because many of the population has either been infected severely by it already or have been vaccinated or both, that the effectiveness of the virus in terms of severe illness is waning.
Right. Well, we really do want to get back to normal. But as I say to the audience every week, and I end up getting attacked by the audience sometimes. But look, I'm saying mask up at a minimum. If you can't do anything else, wear a mask, stay on, follow the protocols in that regard, and at least don't spread it to anybody else. You know what I mean? Have some sense of compassion for our fellow human beings as a sense of community. And that part of it just kind of outrages me a little bit. So even if you don't believe that you should be vaccinated or whatever, just in case you might get infected, it would be just thoughtful in terms of senior citizens, your family and friends, to wear a mask just in case. You know what I mean? So that's just my little biased thought on the subject.
That's just good advice. I mean, if you're not going to do it, then you should at least wear a mask and be conscious of everybody else.
Right. Now, Mayor, as you well know, because you have been dealing with it, I would say effectively, the issue of, and it's not new for you and not new from cities all across the country, there does seem to be more focus almost microscopic examination of these incidents of violence, both in terms of civilians and murders and fratricide, both of civilians and police these days. President Biden made a high-profile visit to New York to meet with the newly elected mayor, Eric Adams, who is a former police officer. And I know I saw a release in which you had some comments on that summit, if not the summit itself, certainly the partnership and collaboration with the Biden administration on this issue. So I'm wondering, were you able to attend that summit, that meeting that was held? But irrespective of that, what is your view of sort of Biden's prescription, his blueprint for dealing with violence?
Well, I think one thing that he's gotten right that most people have not is the necessity to have the public involved to use community-based initiatives to begin to help reduce violence and crime, because beginning to understand that public safety should be in the hands of the public and not the police. I think that's at least not solely the police. I think that is, at least commendable in terms of him understanding that. Actually getting those resources into the hands of these community-based organizations is something different. We have to make sure that they get that. A lot of folks have been doing great work in helping to reduce violence and crime and making it unnecessary to over-police these communities. So I think that part of it is right. And then, just trying to track these ghost guns and illegal guns that are making their way into our neighborhoods, on that pipeline, I think that's important as well. Just to track down these gun dealers and gun manufacturers. Nobody really talks about those guys, but, they're the ones making and selling these guns. So some pressure needs to be put on them.
Right. I raise that because, this is, and you're a political leader, and, we went through the era of the crack cocaine epidemic, the war on drugs and all of that. And sometimes people, including advocates, sort of downplay the reality of what's happening in the community because we want reform. We don't want over-policing and whatever.
Some of those people don't live in the community. So, I struggle with people all the time who have like a privileged kind of viewpoint of this situation. They don't live in a community where those things are happening or they would think a little differently about what's going on.
Right.
And at least have some nuance to what they're saying and sharpen their theory, because it's pretty dull, which is why it can't get any traction in our community. This kind of, it's really an ultra left position. It can't get any traction in our community, and why people get upset when folks go with these kind of moderate elected officials is because we have not been sophisticated enough or sharp enough on our, theory and our line to make it palatable to regular, ordinary working people that live in these communities where high violence is taking place. There's nobody whose children is getting shot at parks and picnics. People get murdered in the street every day. Going to go with a abolish the police line. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. How do you, and I understand some of these folks' sentiment, but how do you get what you're trying to get or convince people at a level you're trying to convince them with a line as dull as that?
Right. Well, I mentioned that because I actually wish people would look at, again, what Biden is saying. It's interesting how Biden is messaging. He's quick to say, I'm not for defunding the police. I want to increase funding for the police. But when you really unpack what he is saying, he's really adopting some of the recommendations that people who are talking about, reducing the footprint, in terms of community-based funding and organizations and having counselors and so forth. So it's important to kind of listen because it's hard, when you're in these elected offices, it's easy if you're not governing. Opposition, I guess, is kind of easy, but it does, I think, challenge us to really listen, carefully to what people are saying. Because people do have to figure out, how to govern, and it's not necessarily easy.
Yes. No, absolutely. And, giving money to these other community-based organizations is right. And locally, people can begin to use their police budgets in very creative ways that not necessarily designed to, put more police in people's neighborhoods or buy, like, weapons of like, warlike weapons for police officers. You can use that money for community kind of intervention, to buy social workers and all these other kind of things as well, which is what we do in Newark. And that is the same objective that we're reaching, but doing it in a way that we collectively embrace what everybody needs to move our community forward in terms of public safety.
Right. And by the way, I noticed that your person who is leading the policing is not called a police chief. It's called, I think, the director of public safety, right? Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep.
And so that in and of itself signals a sense of a new direction, a new kind of direction. And so I'm glad to be able to engage you on that particular point, because it is one that, you know, it's difficult, these conversations that we're having. A couple of more things I wanted to ask you before you get back to your busy, busy, busy work. One of them has to do with Black history. I'm going to save that one for last. But I'm also, and you and I have discussed this issue of, you know, the plight of the Democratic Party to some degree in terms of the kind of deliverables that have gotten out there. And yet, you know, you see a situation where the president is tanking in the polls. It's kind of interesting when you compare it to what was happening previously. But, you know, just recently, I think last week, there was this stunning jobs report. I forget, almost 500,000 jobs were created, 460,000 jobs. Everybody was like, oh, they weren't expecting it. The economy seems to be booming or coming back. But yet there is this inflation. There's the whole question of stalling in the pipeline to get things, you know, getting things into the ports and whatnot. And I'm just wondering, you know, would political leaders be better telling the truth to the people that sometimes you can't control all these things?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Anything that happens, he's going to get hit with it. The fact that the Democrats couldn't pass a voting rights bill is going to be laid at his feet. And the work that he did to oppose the filibuster and get that done. The COVID is being prolonged, you know, is going on and on and on. That's also going to be laid at his feet. And the economy, you know, just coming back, I think that things get better, you know, once this infrastructure stuff is beginning, the money start getting into these states and people start feeling that immediately, the jobs on the ground, the stuff people can feel, the ARP dollars people are beginning to use. All of this stuff is helping the economy. I think he benefits from that, you know, and shortly there's some people who are just not excited about him, you know, because of who he is, period, and his how his gravitas, his ability to inspire, right, energize, and all of that thing. So that's also a part of it. So I think there's a myriad of things. And then, you know, there's a huge, right-wing kind of Republican push. Definitely, that is out here. We felt it in New Jersey. It's being felt everywhere, and I think it's going to be felt in the midterms. These people are voting in record numbers, and I don't think that the party has really inspired the base enough to get folks out in this midterm to do the work that they need to do. I mean, it's not enough to just tell people that folks are trying to beat them up. They already know that.
Right.
It's really necessary to have a real serious strategy and plan, and have some people that are, that look like the base of the Democratic Party out here pushing the line on a national level.
Right. Well, I've been drumming. I've been beating the drums on that. We have all of these consultants who get paid a lot of money to do dumb stuff. Let's put it that way. I want to conclude with something that I wanted your comment on as an educator. And that is this assault. It's Black History Month, and it's like all across the country. First, it was critical race theory, which is a bogus attack as well. But, you know, people are just outright now saying you shouldn't teach Black history to children in school. Yeah. And I reference that because in the state of New Jersey, Bill Payne, who's a friend and ally, you know, the Amistad program and all of those kind of things. So what do you make? What is the significance of this kind of attack?
There's a serious backlash that's happening, you know. It is, and people should take note of it. I mean, you have bills being passed that, you know, people could school boards and teachers could be reported or get in trouble if they make white children feel uncomfortable in class. Here we are. We done felt uncomfortable for 400 years. We ain't got one bill passed. We can't even get a lynching bill passed. These people getting stuff passed to say if they feel uncomfortable. This is too much. And it's going further and further to the right. It has to be opposed and exposed because this is happening on local levels. And because it hasn't happened nationally, you know, it hasn't gotten the same coverage. Like, this is stuff is happening in Florida with crazy DeSantis and West Virginia and parts of Pennsylvania and states in the South. And these laws and school boards that are coming up with this, you know, we're banning books again. You can't teach this. You have to make sure people are comfortable. It is really a disgrace and a whitewashing of American history that – And if that, which is the problem in the beginning, if you want to destroy white supremacy, you have to teach the truth. And because it not only gives black people the confidence and that they need, but it also teaches other folks the horrific things that happen and allow them to understand the dynamics of this country and hopefully humanizes them.
Right. Absolutely. Well, I wanted to raise that with you because I know that as an educator, you know, and there are people in the city, you know, lots of excellent educators there in Newark who are, you know, educating the children. And to me, this is something that, again, our folks need to pay attention to. This is a part of an overall strategy. And to me, irrespective of Biden, in some ways, we have to articulate our own interests. And we need to be ready to be ready for the revolution, as Kwame Ture said, by using all methods and means, including marching on those ballot boxes in a way that they've never, ever seen, in order to say, we ain't going back, as John Lewis said, we ain't going back to Jim Crow segregation and all of that madness.
Yep.
Well, Mayor, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. We always appreciate you coming on and sharing this knowledge. And congratulations on the big announcement you're going to be making on Friday. It is an example of your leadership, but also a leadership that engages the public and the people in getting things done. So we really appreciate it.
Thank you, man. Take care.
All right. The Honorable Roz J. Baraka, our State of Newark Report. Again, we do it the first of every month. Well, the professor is going up on the soapbox now, and we want you to get ready because we are going to ask you to call in at the end. We're going to spend hopefully a good deal of time with audience call-in. Our number, of course, is 212-209-2877. You can line up because you're going to be privy to a major announcement that we're about to make. And that is around this issue of violence and crime and fratricide. The Institute of the Black World 21st Century has as a part of its major work dealing around issues of criminal justice reform or criminal justice restructuring or accountability, as well as mass incarceration. And so today we want to talk about that within the context of issuing a call to Mayor Eric Adams that something can be done, and that something is to convene the people in their entirety to address this question. Again, IBW is involved in this work. We have a Police Justice and Accountability Task Force under the leadership of Ronald Hampton, who is a former executive director of the National Black Police Association, and he is a retired police officer and one of the best in the country. In fact, the Institute of the Black World 21st Century is, in fact, actually engaging corrections officers and police officers and scholars around this issue of reimagining public safety and law enforcement. Now, there's a concern, obviously, and that concern is the increasing, well, first of all, we just want to say, obviously, we had this high-profile visit by President Biden, as I was mentioning earlier, to with Mayor Baraka, and to meet with Eric Adams. And it was in response to the fears and anxieties about gun violence and fratricide and murder of civilians and police officers. It's real. But I have a concern, and that concern is the increasing calls for law and order. Remember that from the Nixonian days and the right wing before? And a return to you, the Giuliani-style quality of life, broken windows, the broken windows theory, the street crimes unit, and paramilitary type policing. You know, the kind of people that break down doors with no-knock warrants. Yeah, concerned about that. And there's a warning. John Lewis said, we ain't going back to Jim Crow segregation. And IBW and allies and people who are working in this drug policy accountability area are all saying, we ain't going back to Giuliani-style policing. We ain't going back to those days. Why? Because it inflicted massive harm, trauma, and damage on black families and black neighborhoods. So that's not the solution, right? That's not the solution. But there is a solution. And Mayor Raj J. Baraka alluded to it in terms of Biden's potential approach. And that is today, we're issuing from the Institute of the Black World 21st Century a public call for a community summit of stakeholders to engage in a conversation and an action-oriented conversation and discussion about creating and sustaining just, safe, and I'm using all of my words intentional, and wholesome communities based on new ideas, new models, reimagining public safety and law enforcement, because we ain't going back to the Giuliani-style policing. And what I'm saying is what we need to do is convene everybody. Some people we may like, some people we may not like, some people we've worked with, some we may not have worked with. But this is kind of the way the IBW works in terms of its notion of promoting collaboration, you know, to heal and empower black families, communities, and nations. We facilitate these kinds of gatherings all the time. So therefore, we need police involved, obviously, correction officers, presidents of the police unions. That's right. Presidents of the police unions, the prosecutor, district attorneys, elected officials, business leaders, bankers, scholars, and policy analysts. We need all of those folks involved. But the most crucial ingredient are people who work directly or advocate for communities. And that's faith leaders, and you've heard some of them out, you know, interdenominational faith leaders calling for change. And people are terrified. People are hurt. People are harmed. We can't downplay that. This is real. But the reality is we need to engage everybody. Faith leaders, labor, civil rights leaders, civil liberties organizations, police and criminal justice advocates are absolutely crucial to this process. For example, organizations like Vocal New York, CATAL, Just Leadership USA, Center for New Leadership for Urban Solutions, the Coalition for a Coalition Against Anti-Asian Violence, the Drug Policy Alliance, and models of violence interrupters. We have them right here in this community. Man Up, one of the most powerful models in the whole country, right here in East New York. Man Up. And the work that Erica Ford has done for many, many years with Life Camp Incorporated. We need all of them involved. And yes, we have organizations that like 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement. Yeah, we got organizations like that still around. The Guardians, Blacks in Law Enforcement, and many, many others need to be involved in this process. So what we're saying is this is possible. And IBW is willing to help facilitate in whatever way we can, have some experience in this area, going way back to our days with the Center for Constitutional Rights. I won't bore you with that now, Pastor. We can talk later. But we need to get this done. A summit of this type with comprehensive engagement of stakeholders from all areas and sectors of life could become a model for the nation in terms of addressing one of the most brutal, egregious, traumatizing epidemics and pandemics that we're experiencing in terms of gun violence, fratricide, and murder in our community. It hurts. It's harmful. And so we know Eric, people like myself, I don't know him personally, but, you know, he's a likable guy. He's someone that seems accessible, you know, and Clyburn talked about Biden. He said, oh, we know Biden. Well, some people supported Eric Adams because we know Eric. We remember him from the days of 100 blacks in law enforcement. In fact, he just had to roll back some remarks because of what he was saying about what he was doing inside the police department. He used an unfortunate sort of disparaging language and describing some of the people who were blocking change. But he was in there fighting, which means he does have some understanding. Question is, how will he calibrate it now? We say we know Eric Adams, our mayor, and we hope he's listening, and we hope he will respond. And so we await a response from our mayor, Eric Adams. And in the words of Dorsey Nunn, the founder of All of Us or Not, All of Us or None, it must be all of us or none of us. We're not just having one sector of the community decide this. We must all be involved in the solution. And we ain't going back to no Giuliani-style policing. Well, that's my commentary, and we want to get people's opinion about the commentary. We go up on the soapbox and invite you to give us a call. And in that regard, you know, we want to confine our comments, if we can, to what do you think about the idea of a summit? Is that something you think is feasible or workable, or is it just a waste of time? Your assessment of Biden's visit and the visit with Mayor Eric Adams, he was highly profiled. I mean, Mayor Adams has become a star because of the stance that he took. He's become the figure that people are focusing on because New York do be New York. It is the Big Apple. And, of course, that's what happened with Giuliani. What Giuliani did became spread all across the country. So, theoretically, what happens in New York, how Mayor Eric Adams handles this vital, critical issue could become a model for the nation. And we should want it to become a model for the nation. But it means that all of us have to be engaged, I think, in identifying and prescribing, analyzing the cause and prescribing the solution. And then finally, what are your ideas about solving the crisis? So we got time now. We got about maybe 20 minutes or so. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. We'll get you into the conversation. 212-209-2877. This is the professor. We're on the soapbox, and we want to get everybody into this conversation. It's hot, it's heavy, it's relevant. 212-209-2877. I may have missed my cue here. Let me just see. Oh, yeah, we're ready to rock. We're ready to roll. We're ready for the revolution this afternoon on a very serious topic. So if I sound a little light, I'm not really taking it lightly. This is serious. We've got to solve this problem. And I'm calling on the mayor of the city, Eric Adams, to convene a comprehensive summit of all stakeholders to engage in identifying the cause and prescribing a solution that we can all share in and work on together. Let's go to our first caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon. Mayor Bomani calling from Newark, New Jersey.
Yes.
I just wanted to say to you, greetings, Ron Daniels. You met us. We attended, I think you did a State of Black Newark here at NJIT.
Oh,
and
yes.
We were some of the protesters who protest outside, about the issues that, you know, no one seems to, you know, want to hear from the public, the community who are affected. Everybody always want to, you know, talk to the politicians and get their side of the story. But I'm here to say this is our side of the story. The fact of the matter is that there's no safe level of lead to be in our water. And if folks go to www.ewg.org, Newark still have lead in their water. We, you can go see it. You can put your address in. And like I said, there's no safe level. Even though the city of Newark is below the federal level, the levels are still high.
Yeah, well, there, let me just say, excuse me. This is not the major subject of our conversation today. I appreciate your observation. I would assume that you are in conversation with civil rights, human rights organizations, and elected officials about this matter, which is where it properly needs to be made. We trust the mayor, I trust the mayor, to have advanced this proposal with the broad support of engagement of a lot of people in the city. And I recall him actually getting people going out to help identify these pipes and to help solve the problem. He did that in a way that a lot of mayors don't. Now, if he missed you, I don't know why. Maybe it's because of how you address people and how you deal with folks, because sometimes conciliation and having an approach that is a little bit more open is better than, you know, outright attack. But, there may be, obviously, in any kind of thing, there are levels that are defined by the federal government in terms of what is defined as safe. Now, that might not be safe enough for you, but there are standards that are identified. And I feel confident that the city would not be perpetrating a fraud on the citizens by not actually meeting those guidelines. And if they're meeting those guidelines, maybe there's some other things that need to be done. Then what you need to be doing is organizing some people for a civil conversation with the mayor, city council, and others to advance your agenda. Thank you. Really appreciate your call. All right, 212-209-2877. We are really talking about the issue. That is a level of violence in a sense, because obviously we're concerned about that. We are. But I do have great confidence in Mayor Baraka in terms of moving that forward. But we're talking about the issue of violence and fratricide in our community. We've issued a call from the Institute of the Black World 21st Century for a summit, a comprehensive summit of all stakeholders from all sectors and walks of life in the city. And we'd like your perspective on that, your assessment of Biden's visit and meeting with Eric Adams and the community while he was here, and or your solutions, your ideas about what should be done. That's what we want to get rapid fire comments on. 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I would like to know that what is it so much about guns that's so attractive to our young people? I mean, it seems as though this is it a status symbol? Is it something that make me feel more of a, I don't know, a man? But it seems to be that's the thing. How can we get our young people to know that having a gun is, because the only reason you have a gun is to hurt somebody with it. You know, you're not going to go hunting, you're going to hurt somebody. And somebody in your community will probably be hurt by you if you have a gun.
Right. So I think what we need to do, appreciating what you're talking about, is, you know, I mean, there's always been beefs, you know. People always have disagreed with each other. And there always have been gangs, by the way, in our community over the years. Certainly, I'm out of the Hill District of Pittsburgh. I remember that. But the difference is your ability to get your hand on a gun. What used to be settled with a fist fight or a brick or a rock or, you know, a knife. And I mean, I'm not advocating any of that. But now you have an opportunity to use deadly force. And yes, it's glorified in a way that is not healthy, which means we have to be able to reach out and touch our young people to have them both, first of all, love themselves, respect themselves, which is why Black History Month is so incredibly important. And then to see in others themselves in terms of not using deadly force and violence to resolve, in many instances, silly, petty kinds. I mean, somebody stepped on my shoes. Somebody said something about my girlfriend. I mean, just taking people out over, and then it becomes tit for tat and revenge, and it is spiraled completely out of control. And we have to work very hard with all of our organization, lovingly, and I use my words at my lovingly, to understand and to be able to touch people, to put in place the kinds of programming, the kind of counseling, the kind of aid and assistance that will be needed in order to rescue and help our young people. And by the way, I reference organizations that are doing it. Man Up in East New York is a classic example of an organization that is doing violence interrupting. And in East New York, the murder rate, the violence rate is way down because of the investment and the kind of work they do. And again, I also reference Sister Erica Ford with Life Camp. Life Camp has been doing that work as well. People need to turn to these types of folk, these models, and invest in them heavily. But we got a serious problem, and we got to unite and get behind it and get it done. Thanks so much for your call. Let's go to other callers. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon, sir. I was listening to your last caller. You don't just have a gun to hurt people. Most people have guns, so they say, to protect themselves. And in the ghetto, when you are not going to call the police, which majority of the times you are not, you have to protect yourself. Now, I'm not saying that's right, but I'm just putting that one thing out there. Right. Also, if we're going to be realistic and really be honest with ourselves. If most black people, adults, are earning less than their white counterparts, and women are earning even less than the black man, then what are teenagers earning? What are young people earning? Meanwhile, a lot of them are becoming heads of household. A lot of them have kids. A lot of them are trying to get out of mama's house, Big Mama's house, whoever's couch. Let's be real. When you ain't making no money and you feel like the world is looking at you like you are less than zero, what do you have to lose? It's almost right. Like what Donald Trump said. You ain't making nothing. You ain't got nothing. Why don't you vote for me? What do you got to lose? So without that foolishness, the reality is, when you got all these things against you and you living in one of the richest countries on the planet and one of the richest cities on the planet, and you have to do what? Get online for scraps, for cheese? You watched your parents work 2-3 jobs and have nothing, so they want to sell.
Right.
They
so
steal.
Therefore, give me your solution. Give me your recommendation for how we get out.
Get them some trade jobs. Give people
some
hope.
Jobs.
Let them
jobs.
Know what it is to make $50,000 without having right. to sling rock.
Right.
Let them know what it is.
Right. I agree, brother. I absolutely agree. This is not rocket science. Jobs with good wages would do a hell of a lot to get people out of this crisis. Thanks much. Appreciate your call. 212-209-2877. Let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon. Good show. That guy was right on. I'm looking in the newspaper for jobs, and they're all in Newark, truck driving jobs. And anybody you can put in a truck is not very hard to do. A lot of people can do it, and you could get there's tons of driving schools in there. Grab these people off the street, go in there and get them training and get them jobs in their own neighborhoods. They can take a bus down to get because they're all driving jobs from Amazon, everything else is all in Newark and the surrounding areas. There's no reason why these people shouldn't be trained by Barack Obama, whatever that guy is from the mayor of Newark. The other thing is, Newark is a hellhole. So I don't know why that mayor is being glorified. I don't know what he's doing for it, but that's a hellhole. But why do we put cameras in the hood? How can you stop shootings if you have cameras?
Well, hold on. You're making bright. I mean, one thing that I know of, and if you listen to these reports from the mayor, I don't glorify people for the sake of glorifying them. If you would, there are all kinds of. I have been at programs where the mayor convened at the Robert Treat Hotel, one example, 3,000, mostly men, to urge them to get jobs and to provide the training programs for them. Now, we need more of that. But first of all, before you criticize something, know what the hell you're talking about. This mayor has invested time. I mean, everybody can do more. And one of the things that he always talks about is this is a collective enterprise. We all have to do our part. We appreciate you making your recommendation and making it clear to people that there are jobs available with Amazon and a lot of these different companies and so forth and so on. So we need to focus on the positive and what we can do to get this done. And we do need jobs, and we need to help get people jobs and train people for jobs and help them to stay on jobs, because if you haven't had a job in a while, it's hard to have a habit of how you work on a job. So all that's going to be involved. We've got to wrap our arms around these young people, and they're going to stumble and fumble, and we're going to have to pick them up again and give them another chance lovingly and with tough love, because we're not making excuses, but we can get this done. But anyway, but let's start with constructive solutions, constructions, comments. Let's go continue to our listening audience, 212-209-2877. You're up next. You're on Vantage Point. Good afternoon. You're on air. Hello?
They both left.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we have open lines right now. I'm sorry you have to wait, but we can take a couple of more callers. We got a few more minutes. We can take a few more callers if you jump on the line right now, 212-209-2877. Again, your perspectives, your thoughts, and what your prescriptions are. And I think jobs is clear. And I'm hoping that out of this collective process, businesses will be more involved in helping to provide jobs. One of the things that needs to happen is the ban the box. So many people have been criminalized by this criminal injustice, criminal punishment system. People out here who did plea bargains for things that they weren't even guilty of, but yet they got an arrest record. They got that arrested record. You got to check that box whether you've ever been in jail or not, whether you've been ever arrested or not, and then you have to check, and then that blocks you. So these are things that really, really disincentivize people to become a part of the legitimate economy. So they go underground. So again, I'm not condoning anything. I mean, it's tough out here. It's rough out here. And we've got to get this under control. But I also want us to be sensitive to the root causes and work on them. Let's quickly go back to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Mr. Daniels, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing fine. What about you?
Good, man.
Good.
I think that every black politician deep down inside, they want to do the right thing, but they have to play both sides of the fence so they can please both sides. I know Eric Adams, he's a good dude. When he talked about doing his pilgrimage to Africa, that's the same thing Malcolm X did. I know that man, he wants to be as much of a radical, he wants to be, he wants to do everything on behalf of his peoples, but he can't because he'll get chastised for it. So he has to play both sides of the fence. That's what all these politicians brought. Ralph Warnock, right? What's the few other brothers too in our district? I can't think of them right now. Even Charles Barron, you have.
Yeah, whoa.
No.
Charles Barron is uncompromising, revolutionary in office, and even people like Roz J. Baraka and Eric Adams. Eric Adams. These political leaders can go as far as we help them to go. And one of the ways you do that is becoming deeply engaged, deeply involved. And if you listen to what Eric Adams is saying, yeah, he's taking a tough on crime line. But when you unpack it, he's talking about some of the same kinds of solutions that many people have advocated in terms of investing and counseling and job training and those kind of things as well. So you have to keep a fine ear. Because you're right. On the one hand, you have some people, including in our community, who understandably want more police. They want more policing. They would even be in favor of people cracking some heads because they can't sleep at night, gunfire, all kind of stuff going on. The craziness will drive people to take, they'll go back and hug Giuliani, for God's sake. You know what I mean? But our job is a job of people like me, for example, is to say, but you don't have to do that. There are solutions. And just work with us. Let's figure this out together so we're not subjecting ourselves to a solution that ultimately will be worse ultimately than the actual thing. So I think we can get this done. And I think you're right. I think Eric Adams's heart is in the right place. He has experience, but we have to push him gently and constructively. That's why I want to call for this summit. And I hope he'll respond to this call because we think we know him. There are people that I know him better than I do. Hopefully they're going to approach him, and that he'll take advantage of this to convene a major community summit where we can roll up our sleeves across the board and spend 2 or 3 days if necessary. But when we come out united with a solution that everybody can embrace and move and deal with this crisis. It may not be solved tomorrow, but we can sure solve it, and we can, as Reverend Jesse Jackson said, we can keep hope alive. Let me move quickly to another caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Thank you, Dr. Daniels. Do you think the level of violence is affected by us treating fellow citizens as a physical danger so much that we wear useless masks and are stampeded into lockdowns? We've reached the turning point, Dr. Daniels. The Johns Hopkins School has pointed out masks are useless, lockdowns were pointless. Be part of the solution, not the problem. We've reached the turning point. But what I want to ask you, Dr. Daniels, when you mentioned Kwame Ture, I'd like to ask you what they did to a proud black woman, Whoopi Goldberg. What I wanted to hear from her is, where is my Stokely Carmichael? What do you think they've done to her? 2 weeks as
well,
a
that is a whole nother show in and of itself and by itself, and I'm not going to try to hastily talk about it. It warrants conversation, but it's not the topic that we're talking about today. Let's go to another caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hey, good afternoon. I believe you said that Eric Adams' heart is in the right place and he has experience. I don't know where you get that from, but I will tell you this. He doesn't know much about police work because when he was on the job, he didn't stay there long enough to actually do real police work. So that's why he doesn't know that.
Well, hold on. What are you saying? Hold on a minute. Eric Adams was the leader of an organization called 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement Who Care. And he served on the police force for how long, sir?
It doesn't matter how long he served.
No. You said he wasn't on the police for very long. Do you know how long he was on the police force?
Yes, I'm a retired cop. You could spend 50 years on a job if you don't know anything.
Oh, that's different now. He did spend a long time on the police force. He just got chastised because he talked about what he was doing to people and how he was raising hell inside of the police department. And he earned a lot of respect from the community because he was fighting on the inside for reform and speaking out visibly with 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement. He's in a different role now. And the question is, can he, in fact, with our support, take the ideas and the experience that he had and translate it into change? Maybe not. You may be absolutely right. It may be utterly impossible, but we certainly want to give, at least I want to give him a chance. Let's take one final caller for 30 seconds. 30 seconds if we have one more caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point to close us out.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, right. Go right ahead. You got 30 seconds because we're about to go off the air, but I wanted to get one more call in.
First, I want to say, with the name of God, most gracious, most merciful, congratulations to you, Dr. Daniels, for all the work you've been doing for so many years. Absolutely, positively, right on. That idea that you have, I'd even be happy to push that to calling for this group, a meeting where people can be a part of it, town hall meetings, et cetera, where folks can come and just share their thoughts, their feelings. And do know this, that this is the last days. Satan, when I say Satan, I'm very, 10 seconds, I want you to know he's so desperate now. He's trying to take as many people to hell with him when he goes. So right. Our objective is to help clear the way so
that
people can see their way to the Almighty. That's what we need to be doing, and you are certainly right on with that idea, and we should push that idea.
My brother. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. All right, we're going to continue to push it. A call for a summit to deal with violence and crime and fratricide and murder. We hope that Eric Adams will respond. This is the Professor, Dr. Ron Daniels. The show is Vantage Point. It's on WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Dial in collaboration with YCRadio.org. We'll be back next week. You gotta fight the powers that be.